Fantastic. Well, you ready to go?
Yes.
All right, let's do this.
Welcome to the Days for Girls podcast, a show about breaking barriers for women and girls around the world. I'm your host, Jessica Williams, Chief Communications Officer at Days for Girls International. At Days for Girls, we believe in a world where periods are never a problem. We are on a mission to shatter the stigma and limitations associated with menstruation by increasing access to sustainable period products and menstrual health education for all people with periods. Today's guest is from South Africa. Sipuwo Mtshoba is the Chief Director of Social Empowerment and Participation for South Africa's Department of Women, Youth, and Persons with Disabilities. He has a master's degree in philosophy and ethics from the University of Johannesburg and has been working in the South African government for over 25 years. He is currently deeply involved in the Sanitary Dignity Implementation Framework to enable Indigenous women and girls to access sanitary products. I am so excited to share this conversation with you today. We had so much fun. I just really enjoyed talking with Sipuwo. The connection was not perfect on this episode, but I hope you can look past the audio quality and really enjoy the content. Now let's go on to the show. Hi, Sipuwo. It is so nice to have you on the Days for Girls podcast today. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And you?
I'm good. It's early in the morning here where I am, so I'm still kind of waking up.
Yeah, I'm sure the energies will be flowing soon.
Yes, I know. I can tell you're a very energetic person, so I'm going to like absorb that from you. So you have been working in the government and in South Africa for quite a while. Can you tell everyone about your background, the ministries that you've worked for, and where you currently are?
Yes, and it's quite a very interesting navigation from one specific government department to the other. And I promise you, nothing was pre-planned. It was just a plunge, and I happened to enjoy it throughout. Basically, I did my high school or my formative education in high school in Eastern Cape. That is a province where I was born. And then I did my university education at the University of Western Cape in Cape Town, where I did my political studies at undergrad level. And then I did my postgrad in development studies. Thereafter, later on down the line, I went to the University of Johannesburg, but I was working at that point where I did an MPhil in philosophy. And I was dealing specifically with ethics. The first time that my career started was the liberation, just after Independence Day, so to speak, because we got our freedom in 94. So out of varsity, I wasn't very clear exactly how my career will pick off or will take off, but, with the air of confidence, during those years where there was a lot of optimism, I started working in the National Parliament in Cape Town, where I worked for the Portfolio Committee on Defense, and I got to understand issues around defense policy. And during that transition period, we're very much involved in policy shifts. Therefore, we're very much crafting policies, new policies that would meet the demands of the time. And thereafter, I could then smartly get employment at the Department of Defense, at the Human Resource section of the Defense Secretariat, where I learned a lot about the military. Thereafter, in 1999, I joined the Department of Provincial and Local Government, where now I was in a different environment dealing with the interrelatedness between the three spheres of government, national, provincial, and local. And it made one understand constitutionalism better, the intergovernmental relations framework, how these spheres, work together, where do they intersect and where do they diverge you know. So indeed, that was quite an experience. Of course, we're not exactly like the federal state in the U.S., together with the states, where there's a greater autonomy within the states. Here, it's a similar model, a kind of a hybrid model, but we are a unitary state, but there is a great degree of autonomy in the provinces, which in your case would be the states, which we call provinces. After I went to the Department of Arts and Culture, which was also very interesting now to understand heritage issues. And of course, it's very, very important, especially for a society in transition, to understand or to retrieve important heritage issues which were neglected or which were not encouraged to be aware of because of the particular apartheid mindset at the time. So that was also a very important a period for me. That was now in the early 2000s. And then eventually I landed at the Department of Women in the presidency. It had not included youth and persons with disabilities at the time. That was now in 2010. I suppose for me, what was great about it was that I was always involved in gender issues. I've always seen myself in a way as one with feminists in terms of the conceptual, the ideology, as well as practice. But of course, we also, you know, during that process, you learn a lot in understanding gender dynamics. You visit and revisit your assumptions, you know. So I wasn't lost at all, you know. So I've been there since the current day or moment that I'm speaking with you. And for me, the most important thing really is about the notion of women empowerment and gender equality and how it is important in a society and how you can never achieve democracy and an ethical society without the affirmation of women, first and foremost, as the majority population in any country for that matter, I think. And also the fact that the simple logic is that we are born of women, you know. Women give birth to us as human beings, and then it makes no sense. It's absolutely ridiculous then to think that all of a sudden those people can just be deemed inferior or could not be able to access specific privileges because of patriarchy, culture, religion, and all the prejudices that are there in society. So I just felt completely at home. Or menstrual health management, sexual reproductive health rights issues, I have so much passion about. And I feel that there's just so much. It's such an expansive field, and there's a lot that still needs to be done, and there's a lot of information that still needs to be disseminated to wider society out there. There's so much also that one needs to unlearn, you know, because you get confronted with new exciting dynamics every day. So yes, we are quite a small unit at the department, but we have a very energetic lot. And in fact, I think that we are punching above our weight in as far as, you know, bringing this matter up into the pedestal, working with sister departments to create an integrated work environment, and also dovetailing that with provinces, you know, because provinces are the ones that ultimately implemented the program. They are the ones who roll out these menstrual products to schools, you know. So it has taught us a lot about intergovernmental relations as well as intra-governmental relations, and also a sobering view as well about some of the challenges in terms of prejudice, patriarchy being at the helm of it, and also just simple things like the enabling environment, where sometimes when you go to rural settings or in rural provinces, the infrastructure in the schools is not friendly to a menstruator, you know, where you realize that, you know, issues of wash, the friendliness and the accommodativeness of the ablution facilities, the toilets, there's a lot that needs to be done. In fact, what you realize is that when schools are constructed, there is no particular model that accompanies exactly how the ablution facility, how the toilet facilities should be mirrored. In other words, the aspect of dignity does not come in, you know. So when this infrastructure is constructed, it's almost like, you know, it's an afterthought, you know, it's almost like people are saying, well, the school is almost done. Other issues are just mere add-ons. So there's no consideration of the comfortability and the safety that has to accompany such facilities for menstruators.
I can tell that you're a really inspirational leader within the government and in South Africa with your community. Can you talk to me about what you mean when you say, like, we're punching above our weight? Because you sound like we're doing amazing stuff and you're really proud of it. And I want to hear more about that.
Yes. Well, we believe that less is more. Well, because of circumstances anyway, would have loved to have more human resource in our unit, more hands on deck. That would have been great. But still, we're a small unit at the department. But what we decided to do was that, look, the most important thing is that you've got to draw in other resources and actually use them and make it a point that those that you draw also buy in into the program or into your mission and vision. That is why the most important thing for us before we could even start doing any program was to look at institutional mechanisms and to say, first and foremost, let's establish a national task team, an interdepartmental sanitary dignity task team, where we draw sister departments at national level, like health, social development, infrastructure departments, those departments that deal with water and sanitation. Then you also bring a provincial representative, so that now, in a way, you look much bigger than you actually are, because you've drawn all the players and you meet at a quarterly on a quarterly basis, and you actually plan as one to say, all of us are confronted by this, and especially we, for instance, our target audience in as far as this program, but of course we still have challenges in terms of resources, was to target what we call quintiles 1, 2, 3 schools, which are no fee paying schools, to include special schools as well as farm schools. That's one category. The next category, students at post-education institutions, you know, universities and like-minded institutions. Women in correctional centers, that is women inmates. Then also to include women in public hospitals. Also to include women and girls in communities, those that would have been identified by local government institutions, in those that are what we call an indigent list, you know, so that we make it a point that, you know, potential beneficiaries, so to speak. Because once we have that in our minds, it gives us a nice planning tool as to, okay, where do we start? Now, having that national task team, sitting as a collective, we're able then to, in a way, get everybody's thinking and also converge on exactly how do we start, because we did get a budget, for instance, right, a new financial year, 2021-22, we've got 217 million, which then we disperse to provinces in equitable shares. So what was very important, therefore, was to say, okay, with what we have now, which is not necessarily enough, where do we start? And we agree that let us start at school level, three special schools and farm schools, because where there is the strategic importance of that is that we would want children or menstruators not to miss out at school. We want them to continuously learn and not be and not find this natural phenomenon to be a barrier for their own self-development. And also our wish was that we don't want interrupted schooling at that formative level, you know, from the period that a menstruator reaches menarche up until the person, up until she graduates in grade 12 before going to varsity or to college. So we want the primary and the high school environment to be friendlier to a menstruator so that they can be able to achieve their fullest potential. And also how we link this in the long term in terms of women empowerment and gender equality. We say that if boys are allowed uninterrupted learning and girls are, then you're going to find that skewed situation at structural level in the boardrooms, in government, in the private sector, in the NGOs, whereby women do not sit where they rightfully should sit in the leadership echelons of those institutions. So we have this national task team that we develop, which we work seamlessly, and I enjoy working with them because they have actually enriched us. So in a way, therefore, we punch above our weight in the sense that though we're small at our departmental level, but we're big in the sense that we have drawn others and then we have become stronger and we have become more effective, you know, in that manner.
You're small but mighty.
Exactly.
I love it. I was reading the sanitary dignity policy framework, and at the very top, there's a quote from Nelson Mandela, and it says, as long as women are bound by poverty and as long as they are looked down upon, human rights will lack substance. And I love that you start the framework out with that quote. Do you?
Exactly.
It's so great. And I'm curious, you know, in your time in government, did you ever get the opportunity to meet former President Nelson Mandela?
Yes, I did. Well, that was before I actually got into government, mm-hmm. because at the time when he was released from Robben Island, I was still a student activist at the university. And at that time, we were busy campaigning because we knew we could sense that the elections are at hand. And in no time, we shall be voting for the first time. So one or two occasions, and I must say we're blessed because it didn't necessarily happen all the time. He happened to visit our campus. And then we, of course, he addressed us, and we had an opportunity just to have those few moments of handshaking, you know. And I remember at one point he came with Mrs. Graca Machel. They were not married by then, but already we could see that, there's some passion here. There's something going on with these two, you know. So, you know, meeting him was absolutely amazing. It was awesome. And then when I got into government, there he was as a president. And I think what he did for us was to really bring a sense of purpose, a sense of nationhood, a sense of unity. And I believe that if we did not have a phenomenon like that, things could have easily turned worse in the country, so to speak. So I think really he was a typical unifier, and a person whom we really needed at that time. You know, that was the right time. That was the right moment. I think history was kind to us in the sense of bequeathing us such a phenomenal human being. So, yeah, wow. Those moments I really, they have always been, or they are always etched in my memory. I shall never forget seeing him. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I bet. That's pretty incredible. So I can tell that you're really passionate about, incorporating women's rights and women's issues into policies that will, help them rise and contribute to society. I'm curious, do you have children of your own?
Yes, I do. Yes, I have two girls and a boy, and both girls are at university right now. In fact, one, the firstborn, is graduating this year. She's going to do a Bachelor of Laws, a postgrad degree this year. The second born is going to do a second year of a degree. And then the last born, my boy, is in grade 8 at high school. So yeah, those three awesome people really are what really keeps me, going.
I bet. And I think that they're very lucky to have you as a father. I bet you were a great, offered great guidance and leadership. And so, yeah, I'm really inspired by the work that you're doing and the way you approach the work with such dignity and integrity and inspiration, really. And I appreciate you being out there being a male ally to all of these women and girls around the world. And can you talk a little bit about the South African Coalition for Menstrual Health and Hygiene? Is that something that your department is part of?
Yes. In fact, it was launched on the 9th and 10th of March last year in 2020. We think that it was one of the most important milestones in as far as menstrual health is concerned, because it was important to realize that government alone, without civil society and other players, will not achieve optimally. Therefore, it's important to bring in other players to enrich the process and also to widen the scope of thinking and innovation. So for us, it was very important. We were part of the launch. We initiated it together with our colleagues in UNFA, of course, organizations like WaterAid and Days for Girls. Diana was right in the middle, in the thick of things. So at the launch, we were all together, very, very excited, because for the first time, we could bring government and civil society closer together. Not that there was no collaboration before, but this one was deliberate. It was pointed, and we wanted to make it a point that we all understand that we have a role to play in this space. Therefore, without necessarily going off a tangent and contradicting each other, let us look at areas of commonality, explore them to the fullest, and then where there is divergence, we can manage that as well. And in fact, since the formation of the coalition, we have found that to a very large degree, there is so much convergence, And in fact, you actually in a way, decry the lost time and moment. You would wish that perhaps we had established this South African Coalition on Menstrual Health Management much earlier, because now we're in a form stage, we're at a form stage, and perhaps we would have loved to be at a norm stage. But, we're happy that at least we had started the coalition. And then what obviously was a challenge is that we established it in March, And that was right at the threshold of the COVID-19 pandemic. And we're not really able to work as much as we could physically. But out of the virtual interactions that we conducted during the course of last year, there is a lot that we did by way of webinars, using social media, and you know, doing what we can to ensure that we highlight issues of menstrual health management. And I believe that we have done a lot. And in fact, this gave us so much confidence and pride in realizing that, in fact, this coalition does work. Because at times people think that coalitions are loose and unmanageable, and that they are big egos, there are certain personalities that want to be overbearing on others. But really, I found that with the formation of the steering committee to steer the program, as well as having the various task teams, now that enabled everybody to find his or her space. In other words, you join a task team where you can thrive, where you can contribute optimally, you know. So in other words, no one is left without a sense of purpose. So I think that dimension of creating those specific task teams, and then the information then goes up to the steering committee, and then we have our plenaries when it is required. It has given everybody a sense of purpose. And of course, we still need to grow. We still need to grow, and we still need to further innovate, right? But I think in these few months that we have been in existence, I think a lot has been done, and I'm sure a lot can be done as well.
Incredible. So, Sipilo, where can people connect with you, learn more about your work, support you? If they want to do that, where do they go?
Oh, yes. I've got an email address, of course, which I've shared with you. I've got mobile numbers, and also I've got a landline. So I suppose it's a matter of just ensuring that my details are well known, because that is the kind of engagement that we also are looking for. To interface and to share more information with others, so that they can grow from us and we can grow from them as well. So basically, I try to make it a point that my email address is not private property. everybody can access it. You know, we that is what we really are trying to do, because we need all the assistance, moral, as well as, of course, financial and otherwise. But, you know, more than anything, what is important really for us is a sense of solidarity, you know, where people can share with us the kind of research findings that they have embarked upon, because we also want to increase our knowledge hub. You know, because we think that in this area, there's a lot of research. But at the same time, there is research that has already been done and we don't know. So it's important, therefore, to have a sense of, you know, where do we tap this information from? You know, is there a knowledge hub that you can just easily, you know, which could be a repository on all issues that relate to MHM, you know. And of course, we work in collaboration with the African Coalition, which obviously naturally we collaborate. But we really think that the most important thing really is to deepen the area of advocacy, research, policy. Well, in South Africa, we are lucky in the sense that our very progressive constitution and progressive legislation, policies and frameworks have been quite an amazing enabler for us. You know, in fact, we have such a plethora of legislation that helps us, you know, that gives us more impetus than some of the countries in the continent, for instance. But of course, since we are part of the African coalition, we also need to assist them in terms of, you know, progressive policies that are more understanding and are more discerning on issues of women empowerment and gender equality. So really, that's why we really need a festival of ideas. That's how I could put it. We crave for a festival of ideas so that we can really grow. You know, once you grow intellectually and you're at that qualitative level, then it's easy to do anything.
Absolutely. I love it. And we'll put your email in the show notes. And then I just want to also add that you are on LinkedIn, because I did connect with you there. So
yes, I am.
I will put your LinkedIn on the show notes as well for those who want to follow your work or connect with you. This has just been a lovely conversation. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. It indeed has. In fact, I was not aware that 30 minutes is over.
I know, it goes by so fast, doesn't it?
It does. It really does.
The Days for Girls podcast is produced by Days for Girls International. For show notes and resources mentioned in this episode, visit daysforgirls.org/podcast. If you'd like to support the work we do on the show, leave a rating or a review wherever you listen. Subscribe to the show and share episodes on social media or with your friends. To learn more about Days for Girls and to join our global movement, please visit daysforgirls.org. Thank you for listening. See you next time.